You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So in February this year, the African Development Bank Group, in its macroeconomic performance and outlook report, noted that the African continent, with all its 55 countries, will account for 11 of the world's 20 fastest growing economies in 2024. The report predicted that real gross domestic product, or GDP, growth for the continent is expected to average 3.8% and 4.2% in 2024 and 2025, respectively. In the same breath, though, the African Union has noted that governments on the African continent spend some 3.5% on their GDP on infrastructure development over the last 20 years. Asanda Tsotsi is head of project and export finance at Standard Bank Group CIB. He argues that Africa's infrastructure crisis requires urgent collaboration in a thought piece titled Exactly That. He joins us now to outline some of the challenges, but more importantly, the solutions. Mr. Tsotsi, thank you very much for your time this evening. Perhaps let's start with outlining the continent, which is very vast, might we also add, in terms of infrastructure. What is the outlook?
Hi, Dudu. Thank you very much for having me. I think it's an important question that you ask. I mean, infrastructure development obviously has a positive effect on economic growth and poverty alleviation. This is well documented. And so adequate infrastructure is critical for the continent to drive economic growth, create jobs, as well as alleviate poverty. And so in different markets on the continent, we are seeing some investments that governments are making in infrastructure. I think South Africa is a good example of where we are starting to see some positive traction as it relates to infrastructure.
As we mentioned, with the African Union also noting that inadequate infrastructure has led to the reduction of national economic growth by some 2% annually in most countries on the continent. What are some of the ideas that perhaps your group is thinking about in terms of turning the tide?
Yeah, thanks, Dudu. I think, one of the first things is really just around, getting bankable projects on stream. I think what we find, that same report from the AFDB notes that the continent annually has $100 billion infrastructure gap. And that is really largely caused by the unavailability of bankable projects. And by that, we're talking about projects that are economically viable, so they can repay the debt facilities that they take out. They are socially viable, meaning that communities can benefit from these projects, as well as the fiscus. And obviously, from an environmental perspective as well, they meet, Equator principles as well as IFC performance standards. And you have regulatory and political frameworks that enable them. That is a critical piece, that we need in place in order to drive investment in infrastructure. But we also argue that collaboration is a critical part of this, and that is collaboration between the public sector as well as the private sector. So I mentioned earlier, we are starting to see public-private partnerships coming through, which is a big positive. But we also need to see collaboration within public entities and within the private sector as well. And so that is our main argument, that bankable projects as well as collaboration will be critical in driving Africa's infrastructure.
What are bankable projects? Because when you speak of repaying debt facilities, socially viable projects, environmental factors, you take a look at some countries on the continent where raw minerals are unearthed and they're taken out. Perhaps that sector, you'll see a company building a road so they're able to access those, and a road maybe leading to the airport. But when you speak of the rest of the communities, do they benefit as much? So when we speak of bankable projects, what are we talking about?
So Bankable really talks about the viability of the project. And so, you can have instances where the state, undertakes these projects and pays for them through the fiscus. But that is obviously on the back of these projects being beneficial for communities, so hospitals, bridges, roads, etc. So that's a portion or a part of what would be via bankable project projects. But as I said as well, these projects need to serve the communities. And if they are white elephants, then of course, they are of no use to communities. They will not drive economic growth, they will not create employment, and they will not alleviate poverty ultimately.
You argue in your thought piece that reforms by governments are critical. What kind of reforms?
So, as a good example is what we've seen in South Africa with Operation Vulindlela, at least the first phase of it. We've seen quite a number of unlocks coming out of that. The work done by NECOM with regard to the electricity crisis, I think we are over 160 days now without load shedding. We're also seeing National Treasury re-looking at the public-private partnership regulatory framework, which is critical to drive private sector participation in these projects.
You mentioned bankable projects, but also the word collaborations being quite important. How so? Collaboration between?
So collaboration, with a number of stakeholders. So in the first instance, really between the private sector and the public sector, this is where, we have been referring, to public-private partnerships, which are critical unlocks. The other piece is that there's a lot of skill set that sits in the private sector, which can be seconded, to the public sector. So these are experienced bankers, who have finance projects all over the continent. And so, sharing those kind of resources between the private and the public sector is also critical and will ensure that, you bring the requisite knowledge and experience into the development of these projects.
You also argue that incorporating climate resilience into infrastructure planning and financing will be crucial. The continent is not an island. We're not exempt from climate change.
That is a critical piece. I mean, if you look at the continent right now, we have the least resilient infrastructure amongst all of the continents when it comes to climate change. I mean, you've seen how the floods in KZN disproportionately affect the poor. And so the argument that we also make is that we need to use ESG as a mechanism to really leapfrog our infrastructure challenges. So build infrastructure that is that contributes positively or mitigates climate change. And at the same time, obviously, infrastructure that will help us improve the resilience to adverse weather events.
Energy transition. Those two words we've heard quite a lot in South Africa, right? But there are other parts of the continent where this is also a conversation that is being had. How important is it for investors to understand each region or the market that you're entering into, more so when we speak of some of the natural resources that are in some countries, right? They can't immediately move away from those minerals.
Dudu, that's a very important point. What tends to happen with the energy transition is that investors tend to see it as a homogeneous event that, all of us must follow all the countries, all 55 countries you mentioned earlier, on the continent must follow the same transition pathway. But the reality is that, not all countries are blessed with the solar resource as well as wind resource that South Africa has. You know, if you look at a country like Nigeria, for instance, it is well endowed in gas, and gas is a transition fuel, so to speak. If you look at Kenya, it's geothermal. And so the argument here is that we cannot apply a one-size-fits-all. And so it's important as an investor to understand that, you know, these nuances when you go into these markets to invest in the energy transition.
We cannot speak about that and not speak about the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, because when we speak of infrastructure, as that conversation is gaining momentum and more countries are ratifying, if we do not have the requisite infrastructure, never mind the other administrative stuff that is involved, but if we don't have the basic infrastructure, just how far back are we setting ourselves in an attempt to move forward?
I mean, interestingly, Dudu, there is some stats out that say that inadequate infrastructure actually increases the cost of goods traded between African countries by between 30 to 40%. And so effectively what that means is that our goods that we trade amongst ourselves are expensive, number one, and we cannot find markets for them outside of the continent because they can't compete you know, with goods manufactured elsewhere in the world. And so, you know, this investment in infrastructure, making sure that you know, railway corridors work that connect different countries, you know, that we have ports that are functioning properly and are able to receive and dispatch goods as and when needed, you know, roads, bridges that connect communities to ensure that trade is happening amongst the different countries. And so that is critical to make the African or AFCTA work efficiently.
You also argue that the other key component of infrastructure finance is the private sector. When we speak about collaborations and also the involvement of the private sector, what is it that you are experiencing, right? Because you'll find sometimes, more so in business speak, they say, well, it's kind of hard to invest in the African continent. Is that the reality that you are faced with as you enter different markets because of some of these challenges when it comes rather to infrastructure?
I would say, Dudu, that you know, the investors that we meet really want to invest in the continent. You know, the pension fund as well as sovereign wealth funds, you know, sit with around $100 trillion of assets under management, you know, that they want to deploy into infrastructure. And so there is a want to invest in infrastructure. I think the main issues that, you know, prevent this from happening are some of the things that we chatted about earlier. So there isn't sufficient bankable projects, you know, to allow that infrastructure investment. It can be also that regulatory frameworks are not in place to accept, you know, that foreign direct investment.
Well, it sounds like a missed opportunity. Am I correct in that assessment?
It is really a big missed opportunity. And the good thing, though, is that it's not too late, you know, that we can get this right. But obviously the critical piece is that, you know, as I mentioned in the piece, we do need to collaborate between the public and the private sector, make sure that, you know, we are leading, I guess, in thought leadership and speaking to our governments about what we have seen that works in other countries and jurisdictions. Now, we can't replicate, you know, what happens elsewhere, but certainly there are some good ideas that are happening in other parts of the continent, you know, that we can impart in our jurisdictions.
What do you say to a listener that is thinking, for how much longer? It would appear that we communicate in silos as a continent, and not necessarily, maybe, like you said, it's a missed opportunity, but utilizing the opportunities that we have, because you've got what, some 500 million sub-Saharan Africans who lack access to basics, electricity being one of them.
Yeah, look, and I would say to those people, and you're quite right, but I would say to those people that, you know, certainly communication is improving amongst, you know, the different countries on the continent. I think we saw last week 53 African countries represented in China for a big, I guess, strategic engagement with the Chinese government, you know, and so I would say that we are starting to talk with one voice as a continent, and I certainly believe that we are not too far from a future where, you know, Africa has adequate infrastructure, that every last, you know, person has access to electricity. And so this is certainly our hope.
Right. Perhaps I condemn unreasonably. Maybe we could look at the not even shining stars, but maybe let's look at where infrastructure is really functioning, and or there's progress that is being made. From the work that you do, which markets are you finding are actually getting along with it?
Yeah, so I mean, there's good work in many of the markets that we operate in. And so I would be remiss to name them.
Okay.
But certainly, I mean, if we look at East Africa, there's a big investment in the rail network through the SGR projects. You know, if we look at, as I said, South Africa, we are talking about a big investment in transmission lines. So transmission company is looking at those types of investments. Transnet is looking to invest in its ports. You know, we see the process, I guess, of the public-private partnership happening there as well. And so there are really pockets of excellence. There are really pockets of excellence. And as I say, I think things are moving in the right direction.
All right. Thank you very much, sir, for your contribution this evening. Asanda Tsotsi is head of Project and Export Finance at Standard Bank CIB.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.